Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you. We're so glad you've tuned in to Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon is on spring break with his wonderful family. So we have the room full of guest doctors and, of course, Dr. Samira Umat here. Good morning, Dr. Samira.
Hey, good morning to you, Lynette.
Yes, good to be here. Dr. Dan Nelson from Pro Ortho. We call you the pain doctor. You don't inflict pain. You help take it away, just
you know,
to be clear.
Last show, you called him the pain specialist.
Pain specialist.
And I kind of like that better than the pain doctor.
I think I do, too. Yeah. Doctor pain.
That's right. No. Hopefully relying more than inflicting.
Yes. The pain specialist, if you've got the back, low back pain, hip, shoulder, ankle, or maybe you're interested in stem cells. We talk about that on the show. Dr. Nelson is here and would love to answer your questions. And if it's gut health that you are wanting to know about, what is going on with your tummy? We had a lot of questions on our last show and we got so much good information. Dr. Ken Pentland from Longevity here as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. I love this because I feel like I'm almost like on the dating game and I'm introducing each one of the doctors. And not the bachelors. And, you know, and from South Carolina, we know. It's so fun when we have a whole bunch of doctors in here and lots of different topics that we can jump into. But Dr. Umat, something very close to your heart
Indeed.
Is something coming up next month.
Longevity.
Yes. But it's about the heart.
Yeah. We are calling it Heart Health at Longevity.
Mm-hmm.
And, longevity patients know this, and many of them have already had this done. And it's basically a little deeper dive into cholesterol. And is there a cholesterol value, a problem or not? If it's high, you know, your doctor may have said, well, it's running high. And the question is, not all cholesterol is equal. And therefore, you really want to know whether you have the good part of the cholesterol or the bad part of the cholesterol. Remember, all of us have cholesterol. Cholesterol is important for every cell. And cholesterol actually makes hormones and is the backbone of the steroid pathway. And so we all need cholesterol, but cardiovascular health has become important. And cardiac disease becomes important when you lay down cholesterol-related plaques in your blood vessels, which obstruct blood flow. And also block blood flow to important areas of the brain, eyes, kidneys, and so on and so forth, and therefore cause, if they're in the brain, a stroke, in the heart, a heart attack, and therefore they cause problems, right? And so you want to know what is your cholesterol level and is it a problem for you or not? And the traditional lipid profile is no longer sufficient marker. So we can actually pick up different markers. So what happens is when you're building a plaque in the lining of the blood vessels, that plaque exudes different molecules. And those can be picked up. Those protein molecules can be picked up. And they are markers for what is happening to that plaque. So if you are building a plaque and that plaque is ready to burst or rupture, there are certain molecules that will come out of it, certain proteins. And we can pick up those proteins in your blood test and we can tell you whether this plaque is likely to rupture anytime soon or not. Mm. And that's what you want to know. You want to know what is the value of the LDL, but more importantly, is the LDL small and lots of them, or are they large and fluffy and not a lot of them? So the particle number and the particle size is very important. And also the same for the HDL. We call the high-density lipoprotein, quote-unquote, the good cholesterol. All it is doing is modifying the plaque. It is changing the plaque in the lining of the blood vessels. And we can actually then change how you get older and whether this plaque is a risk factor for you or not for disease, for heart disease, for chest pain, for decreased blood flow to the heart, for heart attacks or not. And then we also pick up apolipoprotein particles, which are basically shuttle monkeys. They carry your cholesterol molecules from the gut to the liver and back and forth.
All I'm thinking of Wizard of Oz right now.
And we're looking at, you got
That's
to make
kinda
it fun.
Like what
That's
they
what
do.
They're doing.
Okay.
Pac-Man is eating away at the plaque, and the shuttle monkeys are carrying the molecules hither and thither. And the point is, are they dangerous or not? Are they okay? And what are they really doing for us? Are they causing congestion in the liver? Is the liver now engaged? Do we need to detox the liver for you? And also genetic markers. Lipoprotein particle little a runs in families. If you carry that gene or you carry that protein particle, then the likelihood of heart disease is very high in your family.
That's
and
a
so
big one, yeah.
We have picked that up for many people and advised them to go ahead and get other family members tested. And then finally, we actually customize this through Cleveland Heart Lab. By the way, I just found out that Cleveland Heart Lab is now calling themselves the Center of Excellence in Heart Health. And so we actually customized our blood draw, our blood test for longevity through Cleveland.
Oh.
And in that specialization, we added what we call an omega check. And basically, it's looking at how much omega-3s and omega-6s you have. So omega-3s are your anti-inflammatory omegas, and the 6s are the pro-inflammatory. Remember, you need the pro-inflammatory when you have an injury, but you don't want them to linger on for long periods of time because then they are harmful for you. They are pro-inflammatory. You don't want that for long periods of time. So what is the exact number? What is the relationship and the ratio of that? And then how do we modify that for you? There's no point in doing a test if we cannot do anything to change the outcome of what we see for you. At Longevity, we can make a difference when we see these test results. We can make you better, not tomorrow, starting today. And so that is the important thing. So our longevity patients have had access to this test for several years. We are now opening our doors for the first time to radio show listeners and non-longevity patients to just come in and have just this test done. It is a $300 charge, but if you become a patient of Longevity after you've had this review and you or during the process, then this test will become free for you. So we will discount the $300 and use it toward your longevity dues if you become a longevity. So what you would have to do is, you know, do the longevity panel, sit with a longevity doctor, review both of these tests, 1.5 hours of physician time. And after that, if you decide to become a longevity patient, then that $300 will be discounted. So it, basically, you'll get this for free. So those are the options. And the reason we did that, because heart health is very critical. One of the leading causes of death in the United States. And unfortunately, what we are hearing from a lot of our patients is that the first time they realize they have heart disease is when something bad happens. Mm. And that's behind the eight ball already. So you can find out earlier. You can do something to maintain good heart health, good vascular health, and that is not going to just help you today. It's going to help you for the rest of your life. So when we talk about aging and when we talk about maintaining health span versus lifespan, this is a easy test to do to find out what is wrong with the vascular tree and heart health and how can we help you maintain an optimal health span in your lifespan. It's all about quality of life. And that does not begin when you're 70 and older. It begins today.
Now.
Wherever you are at today. If you're 20, it begins today at 20. Mm. But wherever you're at, it begins now. Because your peak health is in your mid-20s. After that, it is all downhill. Believe it or not, sadly, it's true. And you can actually change that at wherever you are. Begin now. At least find out where you are at. The tests are within reach. They're approachable. Physicians can order them. Insurance doesn't always allow you to order them because they control a lot of things. But you can get it done. You can take the data and present it to your cardiologist, or you can become a longevity patient, and you can have our doctors teach you how to be healthier. If you've been listening this morning, we've had several patients call in that have been our patients for more than 2 decades.
I love that.
And,
yes.
And, you know, be a part of our journey. Mm-hmm. And that's the easiest way to do.
Very good. All mm-hmm. right. It's the Heart Health Event, and it's happening at all 3 longevity clinics.
Mm-hmm.
Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood. It's on a Thursday, May 7th, and the reason they're doing
May 9th.
It on a
Thursday, May 9th.
May 9th.
And
whoops.
The reason for that is because the blood has to be treated specifically and gotten to the lab on the same day. We cannot hold it overnight. It is not viable overnight. The requirements, though, are that you should be fasting. So 9 to 3 is the window because we need time to prepare and also to get the samples ready to be delivered to the lab by FedEx the same day. You should be fasting for 8 hours for this blood test. So when you call my team, they should let you know that. Make sure you do not drink alcohol the night before as well. It will affect your test results. So a couple of things that you can do for yourself. Don't, you know, have that swig. Oh, yeah, I'm going to see Dr. Umat tomorrow. I need my alcohol tonight.
Yeah, no.
Don't do that.
No.
In fact, I've had patients tell me, you know, I was going to eat a muffin, and then I thought, I'm seeing you tomorrow. I better not.
Well, better not, yes.
Okay.
Oh, I guess we all think
after
that.
After the
yes.
blood draw.
After the blood draw. So, of course.
Take me with you. I'll go along.
Of course, they'll give you all this information, too, before. But you
That's
do
right.
have to sign up and get your appointment so we can save a slot for you on May 9th at all 3 of our clinics. I'm going to give you that phone number before we take a break here. And here is that number to call to make your appointment for our Heart Health Event. 866 86 Young. Yeah, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? 866-86 Young. You can also go on our website to lmclinic.com and get details there. All right, we will continue with Leading Edge Medicine and your phone calls. We'll be back with Robert from Seattle in just a moment. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way.
Clearly! Well, next week we have the eye doctor, Dr. Michael Gilbert, with us on the show.
I should play this song for that.
That's right. We'll have to save that for next week, too. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. My name is Lynette, here along with Dr. Samira Umat, Dr. Dan Nelson, and Dr. Ken Pentland. We have doctors to answer all of your questions about pain, about aging, and gut health. Our gut specialist is here. And Robert
But he also does IV therapies.
Oh,
he
also
does Viasure. He's also a hormone specialist.
I know. Look
He's
at
a
all
packaged
those
all-in-one.
Yes, she called you a package. Deal.
Right. I'm not typecast.
That's right. We don't want to typecast you. So questions about these things today would be perfect because we've got the specialists in here that would like to talk to you. We're going to continue talking with Robert from Seattle, who wanted to talk with Dr. Pentland about gut health. Hi there, Robert. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Robert.
Hello. Just one clarification from my call in the last hour on the gut health. And I want to ask the pain doctor a question, too, but the clarification would be, should I be taking a prebiotic? I could just eat fermented foods, I suppose. Is a probiotic helpful at all for Crohn's?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Actually, you know, since we are starting a brand new show and there are new listeners over here, maybe, Ken, you can kind of summarize the question really quickly because the patient had came in with a diagnosis of Crohn's with dairy intolerance and wanted to know if he should be on biologics and what else he could do. So that's a little bit of the background. And go ahead.
Right. So he was talking about a Crohn's diagnosis and he knows that dairy is a problem. We talked about doing a food sensitivity test.
And you mentioned the difference between lactose intolerance and dairy intolerance.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the difference, lactose intolerance is basically a congenital deficiency of lactase, which is enzyme to break down sugar in milk, which you could just supplement the enzyme and be mostly okay. But dairy sensitivity is what's usually going on in a lot of these cases. Sometimes it's both. But a dairy sensitivity is immune system reaction to proteins in milk, usually whey and casein. And that's usually an IgG or IgA mediated reaction. So the question he was talking about is, should it be on a probiotic or prebiotic?
And what's the difference?
Right, exactly. So a probiotic is a supplement that has bacteria species in it to supplement the microbiome with bacteria. And that improves gut function overall.
It can be food too, right?
Correct, yeah. Food. Like sauerkraut or something like that, macrobiotic foods will improve that. But the benefit of a supplement is that it has more diversity. Usually a macrobiotic food like sauerkraut usually has a lot of a single or a couple of species, right? So, and then a prebiotic is basically just a food for the probiotic, something that feeds them to increase their number in while they're in there, right?
Okay.
And that sometimes comes in the capsule or sometimes it can be done, you know, in the diet as well.
Right. Garlic, onion, leek.
Right.
Ooh, okay.
So feed the bacteria.
Feed the good stuff.
Yeah.
And there's also what's called a postbiotic, which are the things that the prebiotics make the things that the bacteria make that are good for us, right? Those are called postbiotics, things that we can't make on our own that we need for normal gut function and other things. And some probiotics actually have that. Some capsules actually have that in there too.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Those are the things that the bacteria make that are good for us that are called the postbiotics.
Correct.
All right. Is that helpful, Robert?
So, postbiotic or probiotic would be good for Crohn's. That's my question. Is that true?
In general, yes. If you're on a biologic, sometimes that's contraindicated.
Yeah.
I'm not going there yet. I do have a question for the pain doctor, too, if that's okay.
All right. Dr. Nelson, you're up.
Yes. What's the question?
Okay. The question is, I've had problems with my knees a lot, the inside of my knees pain. I've had a series of PRP injections a couple of times. They do help, but they just don't help enough.
Right.
They take care of, you know, three quarters of the pain, but it's just not enough when you get right down to it. When I talked to my doctor, they talked about it either genicular or cortisone. I understand there's problems with cortisone, but he also mentioned, and I'm not sure what he was talking about, but I thought he mentioned that what he called a new procedure that increased the blood vessels to wrap around the knee there.
Was he talking about a genicular nerve injection or ablation?
Well, I mean, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But I thought it was something to increase the blood vessels. Does genicular do that?
Well, I'm sure there's some genicular blood vessels. I'm not aware of any procedures that we do that. We do have some things called like the MIAC, myofascial activation, that can increase blood flow. I'm not really sure. But, the PRP doesn't sound like it's doing the job. I mean, I think, have you thought or entertained the idea of stem cell injections, or have you had that done?
Only as a last resort. I'm going to try everything else because of the cost first.
Yeah.
But I guess my question is, PRP is out now. I got genicular, I got cortisone, and that thing you mentioned that you said just a little bit ago, how does that compare with genicular? What do you think gives the most benefit for knee pain, and do exercises help?
It's not any one thing. It's usually a combination of things. So the thing I mentioned, we have something called a MIAC machine, which is, again, it's more of a shockwave or sound wave thing that, you know, that's being used for all kinds of stuff. We've mentioned it in the previous show, uses in for ED and BPH and stuff like that. But we use ours in musculoskeletal conditions all the time, and that can be very helpful. But usually in combination with something, other ongoing treatment. So it's really, it's usually in a challenging situation, it's usually not one thing, but a combination of different treatments that are synergistic, hopefully, and to get you where you need to be as far as reducing your knee pain and keeping you active.
Okay, so the genicular nerve block I'm going to try next. Mm-hmm. That's not risky, is it? Do you risk hurting yourself further trying to run after a nerve block?
Go running after a nerve block? Is that what your question is?
Yeah, I mean, do you wear way more bone by doing that without pain and you're not aware of what's going on?
No, I think that's unlikely. When we do a nerve block, genicular nerve block, it's usually a test. It's just really a diagnostic test to see if a genicular nerve, mm-hmm. Radio frequency ablation, RFA, would be worth pursuing. So, and when we do these nerve ablations, the question comes up, well, I'm going to do something that will hurt and not know it. And that's really not what we see in clinical practice, whether it's mm-hmm. working on the spine or anywhere else. If you do something that hurts, you'll still be able to tell. It helps diminish the kind of the lingering chronic pain. But it won't take away any sensory function of the nerves or motor function of the nerves. So it's important to preserve those, for obvious reasons.
Does Medicare pay for the genicular nerve block? You do?
As far as I know, yep. Typically they pay for most of the injections. The vast majority of injections are covered. They're getting to be a little sticky about some of the ablations that we do in the spine. They're kind of limiting how many can be done in a year, which is, we hope that those will last at least a year when we do them anyway. But the general answer is yes, Medicare covers that.
Yeah, so I do know I've had meniscus tears, I believe, in both knees.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But I'm still looking. I'm looking for something that will help. I think I'm going to try genicular next.
How old are you? I'm sorry, Robert?
77.
So I'd be shocked if you didn't have meniscus tears. Most people over the age of, 60, 65 are going to have abnormal MRIs that are going to show meniscus tears and all kinds of stuff. A lot of that is not clinically significant. So I'm always a little bit cautious about ordering an MRI on a knee in anybody over the age of, say, 60, 65, because it's like, it's almost like a search and destroy mission, might give an orthopedic surgeon reason to go in and fix something when it's really not clinically significant, So
it's a hammer looking for a nail.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to give somebody an excuse to do surgery if it's not really necessary. But there's some cases where I think most of the time I can look at an X-ray and tell you what the situation is. But there's times when I think an MRI is appropriate. But, the truth is, unfortunately, in your age group, my age group, I won't go any beyond that, but there's going to be abnormalities on the MRI, and they may have a meniscus. There's people walking around with meniscus tears that don't have pain.
Yeah.
So you got to, I've said this many times before on this show, we don't treat X-rays and MRIs, we treat patients. It's very important to keep that
I tell
in
my
mind.
Patients that all the time. I'm not treating a lab, I'm treating you.
That's right.
We're not chasing numbers.
Yeah. That's right, that's
exactly.
Right.
There's not any one thing. No two patients are exactly alike, Robert. So to say that one thing will work for you is a little difficult. And I just mentioned the stem cell that's a tool in the toolbox, but there's many other times where I don't recommend that and say, hey, I think this is better and it's probably covered by insurance and let's go that route. So.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I think I will make an appointment coming to see you then.
Beautiful. Sounds
absolutely.
Good.
Very good. Thank you for your call, Robert. Chris, we're going to get to your call right after the break. And why don't I give you the phone call if you'd like to reach Dr. Dan Nelson and his amazing staff at Pro El Ortho. This is where you go for Pro Ortho, for Dr. Dan Nelson. It's 425-823-4000 and on the web, DanielNelsonMD.com. Okay, DanielNelsonMD.com. Or you can call for an appointment at 425-823-4000. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine right after this.
You say yes, I say no. You say stop, and I say go, go, go.
And we're we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. Lynette here, along with three doctors live in the studio, Dr. Ken Pentland, Dr. Dan Nelson, and Dr. Samira Umat. If you'd like to get on the show today with your questions for the doctors, 206-421-5757. From Seattle, we have Chris calling in. Hi there, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I have a question. Dr. Mixon has often talked about the need for older people to be careful of anesthesia because it can result in IQ loss, going completely under, you know. And I wondered, I may have to have a colonoscopy and an endoscopy, and I was wondering, and it's been suggested they might be a good idea to have them at the same time, and I just wondered if this could be a problem. Or if it would be better to have them at different times.
I think I could probably answer that.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan, because they don't put you under for that.
No,
yeah.
Chris, I can speak.
It's called conscious sedation.
Conscious sedation.
There you go.
Yeah. Chris, as a recovering anesthesiologist, I think I can answer this question. I haven't put anybody to sleep intentionally for 20 plus years.
I mean,
unless I tell them my life story, then they might.
Because you're talking to them, and in fact, sometimes they're looking at the screen with you, and you can tell them what you're doing.
Right.
So, yeah.
They told me I'd be under. I would be put under.
You know, so usually when they have colonoscopy, they use something called Versed, which is midazolam, which is kind of in the Valium family. Benzodiazepine, it's a wonderful medication because it's not only sedating, but it kind of erases the memory tape, so people don't remember things very well. So it has a lot of amnestic properties, which are helpful for
just
procedures.
The short term.
Right,
just
like short term, yeah.
I still remember a guy, when I was still doing anesthesia, a guy was having a hernia repair in their spinal, and I was getting Versed. He must have told me the same joke about six times during the surgery.
Because he forgot that he told you the joke.
But anyway, I think I wouldn't worry. General anesthesia, I agree. That's a risk for people, older people. It's kind of like a head whack getting general.
Yeah, now, I am 78.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's it's safe.
I'm at the end of the – I'm quite old.
Well, that's not that old, but it's
Yeah,
exactly.
Ask Dr. Mixon. He'll say it's not old at all.
But usually colonoscopies are done under IV sedation or conscious – not they call it conscious sedation, but they're really – most of you are not responding too much. So they use Versed, and they use something called propofol, which is a sedative hypnotic that's very short-acting and works well for procedures like this. So, and they might give you a little bit of fentanyl, maybe like 50 micrograms of fentanyl, a small dose of fentanyl. We talked about that being, unfortunately, a scourge on the country with what's coming in across the borders, but it is a very useful medication. So if they want to give you fentanyl, it's okay.
But they won't put her under completely.
No, not really necessary for a colonoscopy.
Yeah, and it's a quick procedure.
Quick procedure.
It could also be an endoscopy, too.
Yeah, same for endoscopy. You don't need general anesthesia for an endoscopy.
Yeah, and I would say do them at the same time.
Yeah, get it all done at once.
Yeah, don't go back again. Don't split them up.
Yeah, be done.
Yep,
less medication.
Okay, so you don't think there would be a problem at all with this?
No,
we've all done it.
There's inherent risk with any medical procedure, including anesthesia and sedation, but it's extremely low risk of anything bad happening.
Okay. I understood that I would be completely under, and also I checked it online, and they said it could be an hour under. So would that be the difference from a, you said a general anesthetic?
I still think it's, I would be shocked if it was under general anesthesia. Most of the endoscopy and colonoscopy suites in the GI offices are not set up for general anesthesia, as far as I know.
Okay.
So I think it's really unlikely that would be the case.
And like you said earlier, maybe, you know, she won't be as responsive, and so that's why they're saying under. But
yeah, they might be just
really
using that term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Should I ask for anything? Or, I mean, should I ask them, you know.
Or, I think you should ask questions, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Ask questions about, and you could call ahead of time and say, hey, what am I going to be under with or whatever? I think because that's, you know, being under is kind of a nonspecific.
I mean,
that's
kind of vague. Definitely say, you know, that my understanding is when he read this, it means general anesthesia to me. Are you going to put me under general anesthesia? That's a very valid question.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's totally valid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And general anesthetic just means you're totally out, right?
General anesthesia means you're totally unconscious. Usually they have to support your ventilation by your respirations by intubating you and putting you on a ventilator and an anesthesia machine. And that's the whole nine yards.
They use that for major surgeries.
Mm-hmm. Major surgeries, for sure. Okay. Sometimes for short procedures, but not colonoscopy or endoscopy. I think that's highly unlikely. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. So,
Can you give me an idea how long I could expect it to last, the colonoscopy and then the endoscopy?
You mean the effects of the...
Or the whole procedure?
Long these procedures would take. Is it a short or long time?
I mean, usually they're quick. I mean, they're under 20 minutes typically.
Yeah.
Don't they block out an hour?
They probably block one out to start to finish, maybe.
They may.
They have to take some samples and biopsies.
Well, if they're doing that, if they're having to take... If they see a polyp and they have to... they're going to have to biopsy that, so that's...
And you'll never know because they'll just do it while they're there.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think...
Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I just wondered if it would be better to have, I mean, in terms of that, just the anesthetic alone, would it be better to have just one at a time, then come back a few months later and have the other?
I think you should get them. My advice would be get them both done at the same time because that's just one anesthetic. It's going to take a little bit longer, but you get it all done at once where, you know, two anesthetics.
Two doctor's appointments, two procedures,
I mean, statistically, the risk is extremely low, but if you have to do it twice, it does go up very slightly.
So like ripping the Band-Aid off quickly.
Yeah.
I would do it all. I would recommend doing it all at once.
And you'll never even know. Chris, they'll have you count backward from 10 to 1, and then the next thing you know, you wake up and you're done. And they'll say, okay, you look good.
Yeah.
Or we did this or that. And yeah, it'll be good.
Okay.
Well, very important for you to
do.
Thank
you very much.
Hope that's helpful, Chris.
Good luck, Chris.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
All right. Headed to Olympia, we have Dale on the line. Hi there, Dale. Thank you so much for your patience and for calling in today.
Hi, Dale. How can we help?
So I'm a patient of Longevity and Dr. Nelson, and my question is for Dr. Nelson.
Yay.
And on PRP injections in my knee, I had my second one done last October.
Okay.
And the first one lasted nearly a year. And this one here, I'm starting to feel pain after walking and being on my legs, you know, all day, kind of like what I was at my 1 year point before. So I'm just curious, you know, I don't have throbbing pain or anything like that. It's just after I've used my knees a lot.
Okay.
And I only have the problem in the one knee.
Right.
And, so I'm just curious, am I at a point where I might be considering the PRPs a failure and not worth doing anymore and probably look at getting the knee replacement or keep working towards, you know, what's the go, no-go point on something
right.
like this?
Well, there's no hard and fast rules on that. So, you know, we have patients that are highly motivated to avoid knee replacements for whatever reasons. Sometimes it's a medical reason. Sometimes they just don't want it, you know. So there's not a hard and fast rule there. It's, you know, one of those things where we might want to, Dale, have you come in and even take a look and see why, you know, we might have to repeat an x-ray. You know, what's happening that could make it worse? Now, we talked earlier about things like genicular nerve blocks. Maybe there's some little simple add-ons that we can do to help with the pain that would be, if anything, synergistic. Of course, repeating the PRP might be one of those things that we can do. Sometimes we'll do a PRP SYNVIS combination or HA combination. Mm-hmm. We can't do that on the same day.
Uh-huh. We did the HA on both injections. We included the HA.
Oh, and
you
did
that. And the first time,
okay.
I thought, oh, my gosh. I found, you know, I found the fountain of youth here.
Yeah.
And
right.
This time, I mean, I could probably, if I could stretch, I could probably stretch this out for another, you know, 4 months pretty easily if I didn't use my knee as much. But it's just, I'm just kind of curious since, you know, you're available on, it's easier to reach you on the radio show than it is, you know, possibly in your office.
Yeah. And, yeah, no worries. So that's good.
And, you know, the other question is how much is too much? I'm going on a walking tour end of May in Peru, Machu Picchu, for five or seven days.
Oh.
And is that elevation going to affect anything, you know, with the hiking and all this stuff there?
Well, if you're hiking up there, that's a pretty good climb to Machu Picchu. So, you know.
Thin
you
air.
Yeah, and the air is thinner for sure. So it's
I was actually thinking about coming in possibly if I could find an appointment next month to have a shot before I left for vacation.
I think that'd be a good idea. I think it'd be a really good idea, Dan.
Is there any? I also have a question on tennis elbow, but it sounds like we're coming up on a break.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, save that question, Dale. We'll be right back with you after the break, and we'll talk about tennis elbow. And may I suggest getting a llama with you when you go up Machu Picchu and...
or alpaca.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, alpaca. They're so cute. And they won't spit on you. Don't worry about that.
I think I would need a Sherpa.
That's right.
Carries
we will be back with Leading Edge Medicine right after this and your questions. Phone lines are open, 206-421-5757. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Leading Edge Medicine here with you every Saturday morning live in the studio today. Very live in the studio. Dr. Samira Umat here with us, Dr. Ken Pentland, and Dr. Dan Nelson. And we're talking with Dale. Dale, you had a question about tennis elbow?
Yes, I'm struggling right now with a case of what, you know, it's not clinically diagnosed, but everybody tells me it's a tennis elbow. It's, and, you know, driving down... A description. I can't even pick up a cup of coffee out of my, you know, type of a thing. And if I don't use my arm, you know, it feels good after a while. Like wake up in the morning, but boy, just eating and drinking and just doing normal stuff. Pretty soon, it's extremely painful. What suggestions do you? You know, what's the technique for? Helping this problem out. It's
lateral,
the muscle that are giving me trouble.
Lateral epicondylitis.
Yes, Dr. Umat.
Wow.
You passed. That is the correct diagnosis.
Oh.
Dale, how did it come on? Did it come on insidiously, meaning just kind of slowly, or were you doing some activity that...
It came on from snowmobiling for about a week.
Okay, and you were gripping...
Yeah, gripping and hanging on, you know, too tight to handlebars. I usually ride real loosely, but the conditions made it to where I really had to keep a tight grip.
Yeah,
and the dodging around and stuff like that. And it just is not healing.
And it's on your, are you right-handed and it's on your right side?
Yeah, right-handed. And this stems from, you know, I spent a lot of years as a carpenter, framing contractor, stuff like this.
Yeah.
Now, I quit doing that stuff 20-plus years ago. Maybe 30 years ago, but you know, I'm 62 years old and now things are catching up.
Right. So, tennis elbow or lateral epicondylitis, like Dr. Umat said, is where the extensor tendons of the forearm that go to the hand basically to, so that kind of gripping and twisting motion is usually what brings that on. And those tendons, insert on the lateral aspect of the elbow. And there's so the muscles, they kind of converge into tendons, and the tendons attach to the bone there, and that insertion site gets inflamed. And you can get little micro tears in the tendon, and it becomes disabling, just like you describe it. And usually we try to, you know, modify activity. Some people use these bands across their forearm. They can be helpful.
I am wearing a band.
Yeah.
Sound wave therapy.
Sound wave therapy is great. Mm. That works good. We do that in the clinic. Ultimately, sometimes I'll do like... I'll do like one cortisone injection just because reduce the inflammation. Sometimes that'll take care of it, but sometimes about at least half the time the pain will come back, and then, okay, what do we do then? And so the PRP is a great option for tennis elbow. I mean, there's level one studies that support the use of PRP in tennis elbow, meaning that the clinical evidence is pretty sound. We do it a lot for tennis elbow and golfer's elbow, which is on the opposite side of the elbow.
Yeah, the medial side.
Yeah. Mm. So, you know, obviously we exhaust all avenues before we go become aggressive for, like, PRP injections, and unfortunately not covered by insurance, from at least most insurances currently. But it is definitely it's a wonderful treatment option if we get to that point.
So when I was in there for my last knee injection, Sarah went ahead and I told her about my elbow, and I wasn't in serious pain at the time. It was just a discomfort, and it wasn't every day. And so she went ahead, since we had some extra PRP, she gave me a shot. Mm. And, you know, it worked. It didn't work. I don't know, because I wasn't in terrible pain. Now I'm in excruciating pain. Mm. And so I would definitely try it again. But do you do any HA or anything like that? Because I don't know how much arthritis is in my elbow, possibly, you know, causing some of this. Sometimes I can bump the outside of my elbow on a door or a wall, and it just about sends me through the roof.
I don't think it's arthritis
right now
of the
with
elbow.
The tennis elbow going on.
I don't think it's. I think it's just a tennis elbow. It just, that whole area gets so sensitive. I think it's primarily. I mean, it's probably worth. And did we get X-rays of the elbow when you were in?
No, we never did that.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably worth getting X-rays just to see. But I would do, and if I did a PRP of your elbow, I would use our very concentrated form of PRP, which we can do. So typically we'll get, you know, our standard amount, which is 12 milliliters. But if we have a graduated cylinder, if we take the most potent, which is, you know, say the bottom two mLs out of that cylinder, that'll be extra potent, because we don't need a lot of volume going in. You don't need a lot of volume when you're injecting that area. All you need is, you know, a couple cc's of potent PRP. But in, you know, we might even add a little dexamethasone, a type of cortisone that's compatible with PRP, basically. So I mean, there's different things we could do. It might be worth doing just a cortisone shot just to cool off the pain first before doing the PRP. So that's kind of the things that are kind of running through my mind.
Now, is that, you know, when you say do that, the cortisone shot before the PRP, is it like that a day or, you know, moments before?
No, I would think just a dedicated day to do that by itself, to just cool things off a little bit.
And then give you a little bit of a break.
Right,
so you
give
just
you a break.
See how much the steroid helped. That's what I would say would be the better approach.
Absolutely. You want to give it at least a month after before considering doing any, like, PRP. And then, you know, do. And then the MyoFact, did Sarah do any of the MyAct, the shockwave therapy on it? That would be the other thing. If we were doing PRP, I would definitely do that on the same day, you know, pre or post treatment, pre and post injection of the MyAct machine to help get things cranked up.
So, Dale, here's what I'm hearing Dr. Nelson say, just so that, you know, we clarify it. First, you know, diagnosis, maybe X-rays, and take another full clinical exam. And then secondly, if it indeed is tennis elbow, which it sounds like, then do a little steroid injection, because that can give a lot of relief, and it'll basically reduce the inflammation right away.
Right.
And
that'll confirm the diagnosis.
It'll confirm, right.
We know for sure that it's tennis elbow.
Right. And then depending upon when the pain comes back after the steroid injection, the next step would be PRP with maybe the MyAct.
Correct. Yep.
And the MyAct will help with the activating sound the connective tissue therapy, yeah. and right. bringing blood flow to the area.
Absolutely. Yep.
That's the sound wave therapy, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So in the meantime, I don't know when I could get in. Would physical therapy help? Would massage therapy help?
Hey, hang on. Are you putting some of your testosterone cream on it?
No, yeah. I'm not.
Talk to your longevity doctor. Put a little bit of your testosterone cream right there. It's an anti-inflammatory cream. It will help reduce the inflammation.
That's a great idea, Dr. Umat. I didn't think of that. But that's
okay.
That's
I will contact her tomorrow. I mean, on Monday.
Yeah. You can put some cream on there, and then if you need a little bit Ketocam to help you, you know, while you're waiting, we can certainly do that too.
Yeah. Ketocam.
Ketocam is basically a compounded pain medication that has anti-inflammatory, a pain medication, and a muscle relaxant in it.
Right.
It'll buy you time.
And what is that called?
Ketocam?
It's K-E-T-O. K-E-T-O. K-E-T-O, and then CAM, K-A-M, just Keto CAM.
Oh, okay, Keto CAM. Uh-huh.
And that's, yeah, ketoprofen, and I forget what else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When we customize it, depending upon what you need, and it'll probably have to come through me, but go ahead and give Longevity Doctor a call, and let's see where we go with that, okay? But we can certainly get by you time and pain relief.
In the meantime, just go to Costco or someplace and get some Voltaren gel over the counter.
Oh, yeah.
And that works great, too. Just put the Voltaren gel, but you got to put it on 3-4 times a day, okay?
All right. Thank you for that, Dale. We are done with hour number one of Leading Edge Medicine. We are going to be back to talk about back pain, radiating pain, and osteoporosis from a listener, and also leaky gut. In just a moment, stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine, hour number two, on the way.